Life is unpredictable, but preparing for the unexpected shouldn't be. Take ownership of your life planning with Policy Genius to help your loved ones have a financial safety net in case something happens to you. They offer life insurance policies starting at just $276 a year for $1 million in coverage. Don't wait for life to make other plans. Protect your family today. Head to PolicyGenius.com. That's PolicyGenius.com.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8-6-25 and 1-5-26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
The current rise of political violence is on the left. And when I say current, I mean like the last 5 years,
yeah.
And specifically the last year.
2025 has been the year of left-wing
for
violence.
Sure. For sure. This is the first time that I saw a left-leaning publication actually admit that for the first time in 30-plus years, left-wing attacks outnumber right-wing, and that is right. The Atlantic reporting.
Which is like, when you sent it to me, I thought, what? Is this a joke?
Welcome to Rivera and Reeves, the podcast where we break through the bias, report the news, and occasionally trip over our soapboxes while ranting about the headlines.
Every week, we tackle the biggest stories with sharp analysis, unfiltered honesty, and just enough sarcasm to keep it fun.
So pull up a chair, grab your coffee, and join us as we wade through the spin. Because the media is trash and we have zero patience for their nonsense.
Hey, friends, welcome back to another episode of Rivera and Reeves. I'm Sadie and I'm here with my friend Rachel. Say hello, Rachel.
Hello, Rachel.
Welcome, everyone. Rachel,
yes.
I'm poor.
I know. I know. Tell the listeners why.
I am so poor. Oh my gosh. I have two female rescues. I literally rescued them off the street. Like they
dogs.
Were maybe, dogs. Yeah, dogs. They were like 5 weeks old, found them in the middle of the street in a sketchy, sketchy part of town. And so they're, the girls are about 2.5 years old, Daisy and Tulip. We call them the flowers. And Daisy decided to have a really bad tummy ache. And we found out what I thought was textile. She had a bowel obstruction. We thought it was like cushions or something. And it was grass. Mm-hmm. It was a pound and a half of grass that she decided to ingest.
That's a lot. Because how big is Daisy?
She's tall and lean, but she's maybe just over 40 pounds. She's like a small Labrador looking. She's a yellow, like lab looking dog, mm-hmm. but she's mixed with a pit bull. Like her sister looks like a pit bull. And pound and a half of grass.
Mm.
And I don't even want to talk about what that vet bill was because she ended up like we had to take her to the ER. She ended up overnight. In my defense, I don't have kids. Okay. So this is,
do you have that? You know how everybody gets that fancy schmancy pet insurance? Do you have that?
It's not a pet insurance per se. So it's like a credit line that's specific for when you have, like emergencies like this.
Yeah.
So where you can find, you still have to pay for it. So it's not like the insurance company, you know, splits the bill with you, like traditional insurance. What it is that it's a line of credit that's specific for emergencies like this. So we do have that if, you know, we end up with something unexpected and then we have to, but we still have to pay it off. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And so it's still mucho, mucho dinero. Okay.
Yeah. I know.
But she's fine. Thankfully, good. We got a call from the vet this morning. She's doing well. She's due to come home today. But then we have to go through this whole fiasco of like, she can't play with everyone. She can't go on up and down the stairs. She has to wear a cone. So that's going to be
fun. They hate that. They hate the cone.
Yes, they. I hate the cone. Do you know what it is to get assaulted with a cone on the regular? Because they
can't. That's true. It's true.
It's not fun.
No.
So that was I was like at the ER vet at, I think I got home at midnight or something like that. So I'm also a little sleep deprived.
Sometimes.
But yesterday, actually, no, let me do this. But if this is your first time here, welcome. You have found your new favorite podcast. Make sure you hit that follow button so you don't miss another episode. We're here every Tuesday and Thursday. For our paying supporters on our Substack, we have a bonus episode coming out this weekend. The goal is Saturday, maybe Sunday. It depends on my schedule because, you know, but it is our monthly unfiltered episode for all our paying supporters. So if you want to get that, plus this podcast a day early, ad-free, please consider becoming a paying supporter. There is a link in the show notes, right? What are we talking about today? We're going to talk about what happened yesterday in Dallas at a ICE. It wasn't a detention. It was a
field office.
It was a field office. So initially the reports were like a detention center. It was just a field office, which I think gives a whole lot more context because detention centers are akin to maybe like a jail or a prison. So there's a lot more security versus these field offices are like in office parks right off the highway. Easy access a lot of times. Sometimes
like you almost wouldn't even recognize it if you drove by it.
Correct. Like it's just, you know, just like any other office building, you know, off the side of the highway. So we'll talk about that. We'll give an update on Kimball, but not necessarily because
Kimmel.
I know.
Oh my word. Mercedes.
I know.
You are
amazing. We will give an update on Kimmel, but not because we necessarily want to talk about him, because really, who cares about Kimmel? But because of another story that just dropped, which was the rapid
Biden administration.
Oh my gosh. Come on. Hey. Where it was exposed that the Biden administration, again, of course, was censoring Americans via YouTube and Google. So we had X or Twitter, because it was Twitter at the time, Facebook, a lot of suspicions about YouTube and Google. But now we have confirmation from actually the Google attorneys themselves. So we're going to talk about that. And what was it? And then, you know, we'll see if we can fit in a few other like some fun things over at the end. But I want to get us started with what happened yesterday. So it was early in the morning yesterday where there were reports of shots fired in the direction. Initially, like all the reports were mixed because it was just like somebody shot into an ICE field office. And then we didn't know who was shot, if anybody was injured. Initially, it kind of sounded like it was coming from like someone was literally standing right outside the office.
Yeah.
Fired into the field office. And of course, as time goes by, we actually got a whole lot more information. And it turned out that the offices were fired upon from across the way at a perch from, I believe it was an apartment building across. So it was basically, it was a sniper. And then the shooter took his own life too. So he was found on that roof afterwards. So he was identified. His name is Joshua Jean, 29 years old. I believe everyone that was hit was a detainee, but I think it was one died on the scene and then two were taken to the hospital.
Yeah, and initial reports were, everything was very confusing yesterday.
Very.
People were, I mean, they're always a little bit confused, but, and I'm not sure if it's just because of the intensity of the past week or the fact that these violent events seem to be happening more and more. And people are just kind of, I mean, they're on edge. So everybody started and was like jockeying to report how many people have been injured or killed. And so I'm watching it and I'm going, well, I want to report on it, but I want it to be accurate. And I had the New York Times putting one set of numbers out. Fox was putting out another set of numbers. The Associated Press put out one. I'm looking at my television and they're saying the FBI Dallas is saying a different number. And it was all very confusing. But initially people said two were killed, which is technically, I mean, true. But they later revised it.
The assumption was that was the people that were shot at were killed.
Right. But later they revised it. And the one of the two was him when he took his own life.
Well, and there was also a debate initially in the fog of whether there were two shooters because it was believed that somebody had fired like from in front of the opposite offices. And then there was also a sniper reported.
Right.
So there was a question, too, if maybe there was more than one shooter. Ultimately, it was this individual who was found. He was found on the roof of the apartment complex across the street. And today, so at the time, I shouldn't get ahead of myself. There were also a lot of reports about how it was only detainees who were shot. And once we got into the context of the event, there was a better understanding of what exactly was happening. So the reports are from the FBI and DHS also that this individual shot indiscriminately in the direction of the office. There were later images were released that showed gunshot or bullet holes in the office and through the window of the offices. Someone estimated, like a witness on scene said that they heard about 20 gunshots. I question that just because of the firearm itself. I don't know if you could necessarily get 20 gunshots off. But I'm not there. I don't know how long
he was there, how long the shooting was happening.
Yeah, that was happening. At the time, a van was entering into the facility transporting detainees. So the narrative was that because the detainees were shot, that clearly, because, you know, right now we're in this information war of like right versus left, which is seemingly irritating. But the battle was, you know, at the beginning, they shot into eyes, so it was someone from the left. And it says, well, they only shot detainees, so it had to be someone from the right. For context, the van was entering is one of those vans that you cannot see inside.
Right.
So you don't know who is in the van. If you were to use your brain cells and a van is entering, which means it has its back to you and you fire in, you're going to go through the passengers before you go through the driver.
Yep.
Meaning that there is a higher likelihood that in this situation, you would hit detainees before you would hit any officers that were in the van.
Yeah.
So that's my opinion, putting that speculation out, even though now the thing that's gotten a lot of attention was that on the roof, when they checked the scene, it was found that there was a bullets with writing on them in blue ink that said anti-ICE. And that was announced early on by the special agent in charge. And I'm have that little segment here for you guys.
Fortunately, just the most recent example we've seen of targeted violence to include here in North Texas, where back on July 4th, we saw a coordinated attack carried out against an immigration detention center in Alvarado, Texas. What I can also share with you is that early evidence that we've seen from rounds that were found near the suspected shooter contain messages that are anti-ICE in nature. Again, this is just the most recent example of this type of attack. This will be a whole of government response. There will be no resource not utilized to bring all those individuals who are responsible to bring them to justice and to hold them accountable.
So that was the FBI special agent in charge of it. And then this here, I'm putting it up for those of you who are watching, is the image that was later released by FBI Director Patel of the bullets having, it was funny he said anti-ICE in nature when the bullets literally
say anti-ICE.
Like that's literally what it says. It says anti-ICE with blue ink. There are two other bullets. If you look at the image closely, and I'm having a hard time, you know, I would have to, like, we're looking at this on computers and you're blowing it up. I can't tell if the other bullets also have writing on them and it's just that the bullets are turned and you're seeing just the edge of writing, or if it's the wet drops from, like, the water that's kind of, like, creating, like, a distortion of it, whether or not it looks like writing. So it remains to be seen if maybe there's additional writing on those bullets and we just can't see it because the bullets are turned. But there was a lot of conversation and debate about these bullets. And we now have a third incident, I believe, where there is writing on the bullets. The first one was Luigi Mangione. The second one was Tyler Robinson, the assassin of Charlie Kirk, or alleged assassin, I guess, because he still has to go to trial. And then also now this individual. So there's a lot of like, what is with the writing going on or the etching on the bullets recently, which I agree this. And I looked it up. I did a quick search and I was like, is this something that historically has happened? Maybe something, an action that was tied to, I even looked up to see if it was like, did the communists back in the day in their fights, like etch their bullets or anti-fascist or anything like that? And there's like no evidence that I could find of this historically being a thing. Or it even being part of like a plot line in a video game, because there's a lot of conversation too of video games right now.
Which I feel like someone was mentioning that yesterday, that because so many people are saying this has to be part of a cover-up, then the government's trying to get to...
But see, I don't agree with that either.
And someone said, no, this has happened before. So I'm wondering where that was. I knew I should have tagged it.
Well, here's the thing. It has happened before. And the thing is that a lot of times it just requires... It's like any kind of social contagion.
You're right.
It's like someone gets the idea. So there's an originator. In this case, I would say Luigi Mangione is the first one that I can think of.
Yeah,
he was
too.
Lauded. He was praised. You know, that was a main thing, you know, narrative on the news. And then that starts to get copied.
Yeah.
So Tyler Robinson, then also I should say Charlie's alleged assassin does it.
Mm-hmm.
And when was it? Today, before we got on, FBI Director Kash Patel, who I appreciate, likes to share a lot of information, but also at the same time, I feel like he shares a lot of information.
There's a lot. The whole thing is really interesting. This is tangent, but the whole most transparent White House in history, which I totally agree with. But sometimes I'm like, little too much transparency, like how Bongino is going on. He'll just go on. Even the president will sit on like Fox and Friends, or Bongino will go on podcasts and Patel will go on podcasts, or, you know, like appearances and whatnot. I totally fine. It's just, it's pretty frequent. And I'm like, why are you not at the FBI field office? Why are you
tweeting? That isn't so much my concern, because I, you know, they've done it, but I don't feel like it's been too frequent. And in fact, there was a pretty good amount of time where we didn't see them. And a lot of people are like,
well,
why aren't we seeing them?
It did get a little quiet. Maybe I'm just thinking of Donald Trump.
So it's like, you know, they're kind of like, they can't do it right at all. My concern my concern more is, when you're building a case, there's information that you want to keep for multiple reasons, because, you know, it helps validate your investigation if the general public doesn't know the details.
Right.
And second, you know, now this individual is already, he killed himself. So it's not like he has to go to trial versus a Tyler Robinson situation where he has to go to trial and you don't want to, like, I don't know, poison the jury pool and create a situation where they can end up on appeal. But he, Patel, shared this post this morning where he gave an update on things that were discovered of this Dallas detention or Dallas field office shooter. And he says, I'm going to put a list here. It says the perp downloaded a document titled Dallas County Office of Homeland Security and Emergency Management, containing a list of DHS facilities. He conducted multiple searches of ballistics and the, quote, Charlie Kirk shot video between the 23rd and 24th. Between the 19th and the 24th of August, he searched apps that tracked the presence of ICE agents. So this is before Kirk has been, this is like almost a whole month before Kirk has been assassinated, where he was already searching ways to track ICE agents. One of the handwritten notes recovered read, quote, hopefully this will give ICE agents real terror to think, is there a sniper with AP rounds on the roof? And then finally, further accumulated evidence to this point indicates a high degree of pre-attack planning. Of course, because he's looking at, because there are apps out there currently that a lot of these activists are dependent on where they track the locations of ICE agents. Which is also one of the reasons they're masked, but you know, they don't want to, you don't want to talk about that too much.
I love the people too that, I mean, again, tangent, but the people who really they've really decided to make the whole ICE shouldn't wear masks thing, like their whole personality. And I want to ask them, have you ever had your home's address, where your children sleep at night, where your wife lives and where she leaves to go on errands and all that kind of stuff? Have you ever had your information put out there and doxed and told that your family and what you do for a living is the Gestapo? You'd wear a mask too. I've never understood that, why they're just so not, either they don't really believe that violence against ICE exists, or they just don't care that these people's whole lives are not only put on the line during the day when they're doing their job, but then their families and lives are put on the line because these types of apps they exist. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, and I think it should be worth mentioning that this field office specifically, almost a month to the day before the shooting happened, had a bomb threat on it. As in a man, a 60 plus year old man walked up to the offices with a vest and a detonator and threatened to bomb the office. Now, I also kind of want to point out, it's interesting that this individual, the shooter from yesterday, was searching apps a few, maybe about a week or so after that event. Mm-hmm. And remember that down in Alvarado, which is what the agent mentioned, there was like this whole operation of, I think it was like 11 Antifa, like organized attack where they shot at officers, like they ambushed officers, like going into,
when you could tell when he was giving, when he was giving that press conference and talking, you could tell he wanted to make sure that the press got him on record saying, this is not new. This is continuing to happen. And it's too much. Like, this is, because it's not just, this isn't an isolated, I had people who are just really refusing to understand that the left-wing ideology and narrative is pushing this type of violence. They were like, this is, they were quoting numbers. There's this many ICE agents in America. And so it's actually really not that many attacks on ICE agents that are happening. And I said,
yet the attacks are up 1,000% this month.
Well, and have you ever thought that maybe the media isn't highlighting these attacks because they're kind of like on the side of the people who, or they're feeding this narrative to people who are perpetrating these acts of violence and feeding them with, you know, anti-ICE rhetoric.
In that vein, before the shooting, the literally the night before the shooting, Gavin Newsom was on, I think he appeared on Colbert, and he was talking specifically. Now, Gavin Newsom, we know, is really going all out as trying to make himself like the fighter for the Democrats.
Right.
Because, you know, he's setting himself up for the presidency in 2028, right?
Yeah.
And so he was addressing, like, he addressed several things, but this is what he had to say about ICE specifically.
Look, they had, we had a 15-year-old disabled kid in Los Angeles, was waiting for his sister to come out of high school, and they pulled out guns on this kid. They pulled out guns and handcuffed this young child. That's happening in the United States of America. Masked men jumping out of unmarked cars, people disappearing, no due process. No oversight, zero accountability happening in the United States of America today. People ask, well, is authoritarianism, you're being hyperbolic? Bull, we're being hyperbolic. If you're a black and brown community, it's here in this country. And so I'm deeply proud that I had the privilege of signing the nation's first bill to address the issue of masking. Also to require you have simple identification, to your point. I mean, if some guy jumped out of an unmarked car in a van with a mask on, tried to grab me, I mean, by definition, you're going to push back. And so these are not just authoritarian tendencies. These are authoritarian actions by an authoritarian government. You saw what Stephen Miller said last week. This should put chills up fine. Called the Democratic Party an extremist organization, basically a terrorist organization. Saying he's going after his enemies. You saw the tweet that Donald Trump sent out, Truth Social, basically telling Pam Bondi, I want these three people taken out. That's happening in the United States. This can't be normalized. None of this can be normalized.
So there's a few things there that are either out of context or don't have context.
And more than a few.
More than a few. So specifically in regards to the alleged ICE agents that jumped out, guns pulled, unmasked, and arrested a 15-year-old.
Explain.
And then also there's like, if you listen to him, he doesn't provide any other details of that. So it sounds like they have arrested the 15-year-old and taken him away and disappeared, because then he moves on to disappearing people. So at the time, and this was actually, it wasn't ICE, it was Custom Border Patrol. Thank you. I forgot the acronym. They were conducting a targeted enforcement nearby, and the agents ordered, they approached the vehicle, and who was in the vehicle was the 15-year-old that Newsom mentioned. But the reason that they approached the vehicle is because of the boy's father that was in the driver's seat. Mm-hmm. And they ended up, I think they detained the teenager for about 20 minutes and the father, until their identities were verified, and then they were released. So it was a case of mistaken identity. They were detained. The CBP alleges that there was no firearms drawn at the time. Wow.
So he's kind of making a fun story up in his mind.
Well, yeah. And I mean, like, yes, you know, of course, the family says the young boy was traumatized. Look, these agents don't know. First of all, we don't even know this boy. Is this boy, you know, he is disabled. But what does, there's many disabled people that they are clearly disabled, or maybe they're not disabled. Also, mm-hmm. this is a 15-year-old. This 15-year-old could weigh 80 pounds. This 15-year-old could weigh 120 pounds. Do you understand what I'm saying? Like, we don't really know the context of it, but what we do know, or at least according, what we do know is what Gavin Newsom shared and what the CBP shares. And the CBP shared that they approached the vehicle because of the father, not the 15-year-old. So he makes it sound like the 15-year-old was just hanging out there waiting for his sister and then was randomly arrested. They approached the vehicle because of the father. They detained them for 20 minutes. They then released them. And then they say that they claim that no firearms were drawn on the minor and that it was just a brief legal encounter and they moved on.
Yeah.
So, and they emphasize that this is the protocol because of the high risk area. And the fact is that we are in a high risk situation. So of course I would expect law enforcement to handcuff people that they're detaining and investigating so they don't run, so they don't hurt themselves, so they don't hurt others. But this is the continued language that is happening right before we now have this, we have seen this rise of attacks on ICE agents.
Yeah.
And there is this narrative too about them being masked because Newsom just passed a law, which is bogus, frankly, in the state of California, making it illegal for law enforcement or for ICE to be masked when they are in the state executing warrants. And I don't know what it is. I mean, I think it's fun for him, but they have no jurisdiction over what federal agents do. So I don't even know what the point to that was.
Mm. But when you use language like that over and over, he was race baiting too, of course, saying if you live in a black or brown community, you're at risk. When you tell people you're at risk, this is authoritarian. It's at our doorstep. It's coming for you. It's dangerous. They're going to. And then when he said, you know, Trump told Bondi, you know, take these three people out. Of course, you're using the language of an assassin,
which is not what Trump said.
Of course not.
Because he said, take these three people out. And that was in reference to, we're talking about which Comey might be indicted recently and Letitia James. And it wasn't about taking them out as if to assassinate or kill them, but it's to pursue the legal cases against them.
Yeah. But when you use language like that over and over again, and you use it so passionate, and it's like right up on the line of inciting violence, because you are telling people their lives are at risk right now. And it's dangerous out there and it's immediate and something's coming for you. What do you expect people to do? Where do they go with that? Like, if I'm told, and I earnestly believe my life is in, there's an imminent threat right now, this moment, and it's coming for me, because look at what they do all the time. They're just snatching people off the streets and handcuffing disabled people. Well, what recourse do I have? What am I supposed to do? Well, I mean, you get a couple people who have a couple screws loose or who have imbibed this rhetoric for years and years and years, what do you think they're going to do?
Well, and then like in the case of this particular situation, like he committed, like, I don't know if he committed suicide, because this was like, I don't know, like a version of, what's the word I'm looking for? Like going out in a blaze of glory or whatever, where he thinks that he's doing something honorable by taking out.
Are you talking about yesterday?
Yes, where he's shooting at these ICE agents and his ultimate goal was to maybe commit suicide, but he wanted to do it in addition, like as a send off to himself,
like
by
a martyr?
Attacking. Yeah, kind of like, I'm just trying to figure out, because
for his cause,
you know,
I guess.
I find it very interesting that Mangione, for example, and Robinson decided to flee.
Mm-hmm.
Versus this individual decided to commit suicide. And he could have fled because there was a lot of confusion. He's across the street on a bit. Like, if he wanted to, he could have probably been caught, but he could have fled. But instead, he decided to commit suicide and turn the gun on himself.
So, and can we take a moment real quick and talk about, I think that, and this is only because it happened so yesterday and it's so fresh in my mind, but I didn't even, and we discussed this about Charlie Kirk's assassination too, the video that circulated about with Charlie Kirk being shot. I didn't see the close-up one, but I know many people who did, and it scarred them. They're very impacted by it. And I was so happy I didn't. And then I opened up Twitter yesterday to do work, and I didn't go looking for it. I didn't ask for it. It was literally the first account was the picture of this man, Joshua John, on the roof after he'd killed himself. And it was extremely graphic, and it made my stomach turn. I didn't ask to see that. I didn't want to see that. And I reacted. I think that as violence just proliferates and becomes more and more ubiquitous with American life, we're going to have to, I don't know, there's going to have to be some sort of steps that social media companies put like guardrails around these videos and these images, because you can't just opt out. I mean, you can, but sometimes it's too late to opt out of seeing certain things.
Well, and that one was different because that one was a picture. It's my understanding it was a picture, correct?
It was a picture.
Versus what happened with Charlie was it was a video. So I immediately went and turned off my autoplay.
Right.
So it wouldn't just automatically play on my screen. Yeah. But what are you going to do with a, photo? You know what I mean?
Then later they took the photo off, right?
Well, because you had mentioned it to me. And when I went on to X, I found a post with it. And I could tell from the context of the caption, but it had like a, this is, you know,
graphic,
a trigger warning fade out over the image. And you would have to like hit the image to select to see it.
Mm-hmm.
I think the challenge is, you know, it's clear that that's happening and it just needs to happen faster. Do you know what I mean? Which is, I don't know if that's technology and algorithm or how that would happen where you would choose to, you know, you can opt in or opt out, which is even like,
really
what's dark is that
me.
You would even have the choice like that we're even opting in or opting out. Like, can we like not do that?
But this is like
in
our
this
world
particular
now,
situation, I just found it interesting that he decided to turn the gun on himself versus the last two. Of most prominence, they decided to flee, which to me seems like has a much more political motive versus when you decide to take your own life. It's like, you know, the ultimate goal was maybe to commit suicide, but on his way out, he wanted to do something that he thought was honorable or whatever.
Right.
This is just me obviously speculating. So now what's been interesting, though, is because we've been talking about this. A lot of people have been talking about how there is a rise of violence on the left.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we need to clarify a few things before I get into this. I do not deny the talking point that the Democrats continue to repeat that historically the violence has been on the far right. I don't deny that. The issue that they do not want to accept is that the current rise of political violence is on the left. And when I say current, I mean like the last 5 years.
Yeah.
And specifically the last year.
2025 has been the year of left-wing
for
violence.
Sure.
For sure.
And so, and the problem is that it's like kind of like what they were doing during Biden's administration. It's like, the economy is doing great. Look at these numbers.
Look at our jobs numbers.
Look at our jobs. And we're all like, no, something is amiss here. We're having that same situation right now. Like especially if you go back in the late 90s, the right-wing militia violence was all the rage, and especially leading up to Obama's administration. But since Obama, like towards the end of Obama's administration, especially once Trump came in, it has been ticking up on the left. And this is the first time that I saw a left-leaning publication actually admit that for the first time in 30 plus years, left-wing attacks outnumber right-wing. And that is the Atlantic reporting.
Which is like, when you sent it to me, I thought, what? Is this a joke? This is like a Babylon Bee article. This cannot be so.
Yeah, I was like, am I hallucinating here?
Right. No, but
and
hey,
if you guys have been listening to us, you were aware of The Atlantic. They were the one, their editor-in-chief is Jeff Goldberg. Is that his last name?
Goldberg. And he was the one that got put on the Signal chat with Hegseth and Marco Rubio and Susie Wiles and all that.
Like,
and that
publication
was
publication.
Yeah.
It's
is
so
no
left.
Fan for lefties for
yeah.
sure for sure.
They have like little tidbits there that will like some like a guest writer that'll come in and have something good, but like
every now and then
but every now and then. So I think this article came out on Monday. And it says, for the first time in more than 30 years, attacks by the far left outnumber those by the far right. By July 4 of this year, far left extremists had already been responsible for 5 terrorist attacks and plots, putting 2025 on pace to be the left's most violent year in more than 3 decades. Now, I read this entire article, and I will say that because it's The Atlantic, they do like, yes, but remember, all of this. Now, I actually got a little upset about this article because I thought they were like scooping me because I've been working on strongmanning or steelmanning, I should say, the numbers of the increase in political violence and also the past records because I don't necessarily agree with a lot of the categorizations of some of what they consider political violence. But The Atlantic being The Atlantic didn't completely disappoint me because they were also citing a bunch of numbers that I want, like, I don't necessarily trust.
Right.
So, but that.
Good. You can still write your article then.
Yeah. So I can still write my article. It's taking me some time because this is a lot of numbers and analysis and those are not my strengths.
I mean, I just did like a really, really simple list yesterday outlining basically that 2025 is the year of left-wing violence. And I just outlined from March 2025 to this month. And it is crazy the amount of violence that, and I didn't even include in there like the bombing of the Tesla dealerships and different things like that. And there was still, I mean, just a lot. It was quite a list.
Well, and
just from
and
the
specifically,
last.
Yeah, just in the, I mean, in the last, what, five, not even 5 months, because we're like nine months into the year. And I would say the last 5 months have been nuts.
Tons.
And like when you bring up, for example, those Tesla dealerships, that a lot of times, depending on which database you're looking at, won't be counted because they're considered civil unrest, not necessarily political violence.
I kind of feel like if you bomb a car dealership and set things on fire, it's domestic terrorism. But okay, if you want to call that unrest. Unrest is like when my kids decide to like throw a fit. Okay. Not like if I go blow up or try to set like Teslas on fire, that's not unrest.
Okay. So this is kind of, this isn't in our notes. So we're going to go on a little side voyage here. But the president just designated Antifa a domestic terrorist organization, right?
Great. Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of challenges there. And a lot of people don't realize.
What are you going to do about it? So I just want to know.
Exactly. Because technically, legally, there is no domestic terrorism assigning. You know what I mean? It's not like when you talk about assigning Hamas as a terrorist organization. Because specifically, the reason there isn't here in the United States is concerns that our politicians, for example, could use that designation to clamp down on opposing speech, which we saw. Right. Now, they'll investigate it that way because obviously they'll talk about domestic terrorism, but there's no real power behind designating a group a domestic terrorist organization.
Yeah, because if you have something like a white supremacist group or KKK or something like that, the part of America that you can hate but made sense was you had groups like ACLU protecting their right to march and say the obscene things that they wanted to say under, you know, the First Amendment. But then if any administration's able to label whatever group they just don't like domestic terrorists, aka like Christians, or you know, because now we're all Christian nationalists trying to take over and start a theocracy, then that kind of gets muddy, you know, and I want to know what the purpose of him doing that was. Was it just to kind of, you know, appease people and say, hey, I noticed that this is a problem? Or was it because by designating a group a terrorist group, do you have more resources provided to you for investigations? Like, I want
to. Well, and that's one of the things I need to investigate, because obviously the FBI will be like, we have these instances of domestic terrorism and we need to look at these markers as a potentiality for domestic terrorism. That is,
absolutely, that happens. We saw that with, you know, especially Catholic families that were going to student or what is it, school boards in opposition of, you know, whatever mandates they were doing or what they were teaching.
Well, they were even flagging people's credit card charges if they bought at like
So it's Cabela's. Not to say that they don't use that as an excuse, but to categorize a whole group or movement as a domestic terrorist from the level of like the president has designated, that is the part that isn't like, that isn't really a thing. It doesn't exist. He kind of, I don't want to say he made it up or whatever, but the challenge here too, what I have found interesting is that now you see a whole bunch of, because the talking point is that Antifa is anti-fascist.
Yeah.
And why would, you can't, you know, like anti-fascist is a good thing. Right. Because of course we don't.
Well, and there's also
fascist.
The talking point. People are like, what is Antifa even? Like, why is he doing this?
It's like, not it's even not a really, thing it's, in and our it's country. Not a centralized organization per se. They're like little, but they're like little cells. It's almost like, I don't know, like a type of, you know, terrorist cell. And it's really hard to, it is absolutely hard to police because they're not centralized. But it to say as if they don't exist is ridiculous.
Like, did you hear Maddow the other night on her show? She brought in someone. She's like, what is even it? Can you explain to me what Antifa is?
It's like, don't gaslight me.
Stop it.
Do not gaslight me. Or you have this doofus, and that's not nice to say to you, but you have this doofus, Brian Krasickstein on X, that's doing these entire videos about how like, well, I'm anti-fascist. I'm Antifa. And I'm like, no, you're not, you moron. You're sitting in your basement doing these stupid videos. Like, we all know what we're talking about. Yes.
Like, you're on the side of Antifa right now. Stop it.
Like, so annoying. I'm like,
I mean, they hate this president so much that even when he's like, I would like to put out a declaration saying that domestic terrorism is bad. They're like, no, I'm on that side.
I am Antifa. Whatever, dude. Whatever.
We're it's all like Antifa.
I'm like, no, this is not the same. So I don't know. I just thought it was interesting that the Atlantic is like one of the first publications, especially that leans to the left, that's actually acknowledged that this is a thing. So put that in your back pocket the next time you talk to someone. You're like, oh, by the way, even these people are admitting that we have a problem. Okay. Speaking of hypocrisy and problems, did you see, I want to check and see what you thought of this before we move on. Did you see J.D. Vance's response to the shooting?
I saw bits and pieces of his speech yesterday, yes.
Okay, I'm going to share this response, and then I just want a quick response from you, and then we're going to move on to the next one, because he had some very strong words, and I think it's worth playing.
And they said that immigration enforcement, you know what they said? That immigration enforcement had detained a 5-year-old autistic girl in order to get to that girl's father. Turned out that story was a complete fabrication. It was a complete dishonest lie. But when you go around and lie about our law enforcement and you tell them that they're mistreating 5-year-old girls, what do you think is going to happen? When Democratic politicians incur doxing, when they encourage us to unmask ICE enforcement officers, what do you think is going to happen? When the mayor of Los Angeles encourages violent protesters to get in the face of our law enforcement, what do you think is going to happen? What's going to happen is political violence, and political violence has gotten out of control in this country. We got to stop it. We got to condemn it. And that starts, unfortunately, at the very top of the Democratic Party. If you want to stop political violence, stop attacking our law enforcement as the Gestapo. If you want to stop political violence, stop telling your supporters that everybody who disagrees with you is a Nazi. If you want to stop political violence, look in the mirror. That's the way that we stop political violence in this country, and we got to do it.
So that was what he had to say. He actually, I thought I had the other clip where he had said something along the lines of, have you seen the clip that I'm talking about?
I read the clip because someone was very mad that he was, the vice president was saying such things, that if you support attacks on law enforcement, you can go straight to hell.
Yes, that was what it was.
And then that followed, I was listening to it with my almost 18-year-old. And then also on Twitter, John Favreau is a like left-wing commentator. And after J.D. Vance had said, the obsessive attack on law enforcement, particularly ICE, must stop. I'm praying for everyone hurt in the attack and for their families. And this Lefty said the vice president is not a reliable source of information. This is now the fifth or sixth time he's posted a political take contradicted by facts from his own law enforcement agencies. And J.D. Vance, I'm going to keep it PG because I don't want to have a censor on this, but he said the gunman had anti-ICE messaging carved on the bullets he used. What precisely did I get wrong, Dip? And I laughed, honestly, because that is all of us. All of us are so sick of, we are overusing the word gaslighting, but it is so appropriate in every single circumstance. People are lying to us and telling us what we see, hear, and experience is not actually happening, and that the sky is really yellow and not blue. And I, and all of us are J.D. Vance. He just says the thing. And I gotta be honest, like, I appreciate a leader with a little fire in his belly. Like, he is not
especially now, and especially after like such a long history of like wishy-washy Republicans, they're like, well
it makes, I mean, not... what was Pence like? He was very boring. Like, what do we do before this? I mean, it's very entertaining, but he's not wrong. Like, everything he said was in that clip and everything he says here is true. There's nothing anti-factual about it. So I don't know, I appreciate his candor and that he just literally kind of says what we all want to say.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess, like, I completely agree with you. And then you have to get, I get a little frustrated because then you're like, oh yeah, was that productive though? Do you know what I mean? It's like, well, I would speak that way. And then I question to myself, like, was that productive? But then also at the same time, this was,
but nothing is productive. We can't talk to anybody. When I talk nicely to people, which I have done, I feel like, for 5 years online, trying to dialogue with people and hear them out and provide them with facts and really try to compassionately engage and be respectful and civil. And still, they will lie to me and tell me I am wrong and I'm racist and I'm hateful and I'm a bigot and I'm a zealot and I'm a Christian nationalist. So when that happens to you over and over again, and that line of reasoning and being civil isn't working, I can see why someone will finally just lose it and be like,
well, and it's not only that, it's like I saw you were sharing, because you get a lot more pushback on your social media than I do. And you were reporting on the shooting, and then somebody was saying that you were, you know, just creating more divisiveness or whatever.
Yeah.
And that this wasn't productive. But then also at the same time, my thought is, listen, the goal is to make you feel bad.
Yeah.
That you're stoking noticing. And making things work.
Yeah.
Or worse, and that you're noticing. And the problem here that we have currently is that the media, and there's a lot of other talking heads and creators, will shape a story in a way that gaslights you, omits information, and they'll just report it and never provide receipts. Like, I can think of a handful of especially left-leaning creators that they come on their whole face in the video. They give you a report and they don't provide you an article link. They don't provide you a quote. They don't provide a study, nothing.
Yeah.
And I do that all the time because I know that I'm going to get pushback, right? But people just like agree with them and like whatever. Yeah. Like, I'm not going to stay quiet anymore and be like, and not share true information because it's going to hurt somebody's feelings. Like, I'm sorry. I'm just not doing that anymore.
Well, right.
And the way you control your emotions is not my problem.
Well, and I know it's hard for people to face actual facts because then you have to change your viewpoint opinion about certain things. And it's a dirty trick that's played on people to keep them quiet. Like, you can't even observe and notice things, because if you notice them and you talk about them, then you're met with, well, then what do you think about what Republicans did here? You know, the whataboutism stuff. And then you're also hateful Christian, especially as a Christian creator. I get a whole lot of, is this how Jesus would handle it? Would Jesus, you know, single out and talk about Democrats like they're the ones with the problem? And I'm like, well, yes, because it's truthful. And that's what we're called to do, is talk about things truthfully. Anyways,
we're getting on a side tangent.
Yeah, and that's fine. I think people are here for it. When I listen to J.D. Vance say stuff like that, I get it. He's done with the bull cruddery.
Ishy.
He is tired of it. And he's like, don't come in here and tell me that I'm wrong.
I'm crazy.
I didn't say anything wrong. I'm going to go crazy with people telling me that the sky is yellow when it's really blue. I'm tired of it. I'm just not listening to it anymore.
Well, speaking of being gaslit, we all went through another cycle of being gaslit with Jimmy Kimmel and his alleged apology. Or sorry, not his alleged, his comments that he made about mm-hmm. Charlie Kirk that he said, yeah. or a lot of the people on the left were like, that's not what he was saying. He was just like, he wasn't saying it was MAGA. He was just saying that the president was trying to make sure nobody thought it was MAGA or whatever, which we all know was a lie. Now, yep. he came out and he did an apology. It was a non-apology. For context, I'm going to play it here real quick for you guys. Hold on.
I don't think what I have to say is going to make much of a difference. If you like me, you like me. If you don't, you don't. I have no Correct. Illusions about changing anyone's yes. mind. But I do want to make something clear because it's important to me as a human. And that is, you understand that it was never my intention to make light of the murder of a young man. I don't think there's anything funny about it. I posted a message on Instagram on the day he was killed, sending love to his family and asking for compassion. And I meant it, and I still do. Nor was it my intention to blame any specific group for the actions of what it was obviously a deeply disturbed individual. That was really the opposite of the point I was trying to make. But I understand that to some that felt either ill-timed or unclear, or maybe both. And for those who think I did point a finger, I get why you're upset. If the situation was reversed, there's a good chance I'd have felt the same way. I have many friends and family members on the other side who I love and remain close to, even though we don't agree on politics at all. I don't think the murderer who shot Charlie Kirk represents anyone. This was a sick person who believed violence was a solution, and it isn't. Ever.
All right, so that's basically, I'm sorry that you were offended by what I said.
Yeah, that's what parents tell their child is a non-apology.
Yes.
That's all that is. It's a, I'm sorry you heard this incorrectly and you couldn't decipher the inner workings of my soul to see what I really meant. No, he didn't say he was sorry. He should have come out and just said, I shouldn't have said what I said, and I am sorry, and I want to apologize to the Kirk family. And
which is exactly what Turning Point USA's Andrew Colvett said. He was on an interview and he was like, look, that was like, let's be honest, that was an apology. And he even goes on to talk about how amazing it was that Erica forgave the assassin, and that, you know, he says, he basically was like, hopefully you guys can forgive me too. But I'm like, you kind of need to apologize.
You didn't even apologize.
In this situation, no. You're alive.
Yeah.
You need to apologize for... No. But no. Okay.
No, because he's not sorry. He's not sorry for what he said. No, he's playing the victim and he's coming out and he's crying as a grown man. Get out of here. I don't do.
Men crying in public. I don't even like to cry in public. No.
I feel, side tangent, that's how I feel about all the people who cry on Instagram.
Videos. I'm like, okay. You set up that camera.
And you taped it like 32 times. And then you had to keep crying. I'm sorry to all my crying people out there.
But, I'm not. It's ridiculous.
I have like a spray bottle. They're like misting their eyes. I'm sorry.
Every time I see, I like roll my eyes.
I'm being rude because I'm irritated. All right.
That's not nice. Okay. So moving on. So now I don't care about Jimmy Kimmel. Right. And Jimmy Kimmel came back. He had a boom in ratings on his comeback. I think it was like 6.3 million viewers, which is triple his normal viewership. I fully expect that to go down. However, the two ABC affiliates are still not carrying his show. So that's like 23% of the households in the United States.
Yeah.
The bigger issue here, and this is a setup for the story I actually want to talk about, which is how the left, the media went all in right after we had the assassination of a man because he was practicing free speech. After they kind of like did a whole bunch of caveats about his assassination or who the motives of his assassin. And even to this day are still saying that we don't fully know the motive of this alleged assassin. They went all in defense of free speech for Jimmy Kimmel because of what Carr said leading up to it, right?
Yeah.
Where you even had Jake Tapper. I think he was also on Colbert. Let's see.
All right, Jimmy Kimmel. He's a friend of both of ours.
Seth Meyers.
You know him. I know him. We know he's a good person. Obviously, this news is very exciting. But what was your original take on how this all went down starting last week?
I mean, I thought it was pretty much the most direct infringement by the government on free speech that I've seen in my lifetime.
Yeah. You have
I know.
Yeah, that's
right?
funny. Hilarious. Okay.
All right, so I'm not even going to play this whole clip.
I think it's funny. I'm going to cheer, too, because it's hilarious.
Well, okay, I play that because he says it's the most direct infringement by the government on our free speech. Let me remind you that at no point was any action whatsoever taken against Disney, ABC, or the ABC affiliates.
Right.
Yes, Carr made comments. We do not approve of said comments, okay? We also don't approve of the Trump did an ex post afterwards where he said, I can't believe ABC fake news gave Jimmy Kimmel his job back. The White House was told by ABC, which I think this is weird, that his show was canceled. Something happened between then and now because his audience is gone and his, quote, talent was never there. Why would they want someone back who does so poorly, who's not funny, and who puts the network in jeopardy by playing 99% positive Democrat garbage? He is yet another arm of the DNC, and to the best of my knowledge, that would be a major illegal campaign contribution. I think we're going to test ABC out on this. Let's see how we do. Last time I went after them, ABC, they gave me $16 million. This one sounds even more lucrative. A true breach of bunch of losers is what he said. Let Jimmy Kimmel rot in his bad ratings. Now, that $16 million that he's referring is when he sued ABC's George Stephanopoulos for saying that he was charged with rape, which was not the case of E. Jean Carroll. So it was a defamation suit, and it was with Trump personally. It was not with the administration.
Right.
This one, I don't know what his angle is. This is unproductive. This is pointless.
This kind of stuff. Yeah. Just like yesterday, how he tweeted out that Kamala Harris is as dumb as a rock. I'm like, really? Stop it.
Yeah.
Stop it.
It's not productive. It's just not. And it gives this annoying talking point of like, this is the biggest infringement on free speech. Well, mind you, at the same time that this is happening, okay, a report came out where Google has admitted that they caved to the Biden, specifically Biden administration pressure in censoring American citizens when it came to any type of content that involved COVID
or the election.
Yeah. And it resulted in about, like, it says over 1 million COVID videos were removed while coordinating with Biden and Fauci. In fact, I have a video here, and this is the former CEO of YouTube, who was doing an interview with Bloomberg Technology in October of 2021. And this is at the same time that we're all being told that you're not being censored. Hold on. Oh, wait, live over here.
We have a number of different ways that we address that. So first of all,
when it comes to vaccines, vaccine hesitancy, videos that cause a public health risk, where do you want to see YouTube do better?
Well, first of all, we've taken responsibility very seriously. It's been one of my top priorities. And with regard to COVID and with regard to vaccines, that has been a top priority for us. And we have a number of different ways that we address that. So first of all, we want to make sure that if there's information that violates our policies, we came up with 10 different policies around COVID, then if that's a violation of policies, then that's something that we'll remove. We removed over 1 million videos associated with COVID.
Have you talked to the Biden administration at all about vaccine hesitancy or vaccine misinformation?
Well, we did an event actually with the Biden administration, including President Biden himself, with a number of creators, Fauci as well.
I wonder if there's anything that you see in, you know, the way that anti-vaxxers behave on the platform, if there are any data or insights there that could be helpful to people understanding where they're coming from.
I mean, we try to understand what are the different ways that we can break through. So we talked about in this campaign that we did about getting back to the things that you love. So what we really tried to do was get not just from the experts, but also people that were not experts, but who were explaining, like, why did they take the vaccine? Why was that relevant for them? And what was their thought process?
So in other words, manipulation game.
Exactly. Get vaccinated ridiculous. And you can get back to your regular life. Now,
it's ridiculous.
The attorney from Google sent a letter to Jim Jordan, right? And he specifically said, this is a portion, it says, it is unacceptable and wrong
when any government, including the Biden administration, attempts to dictate how the company moderates content, and the company has consistently fought against those efforts on the First Amendment grounds. So it's in this letter that he sent to Jim Jordan.
Mm-hmm.
They acknowledge that they experienced not just pressure from the Biden administration, but from Biden himself.
Yeah.
And that this led to the deplatforming of people like Dan Bongino, Steve Bannon. At one point, Tim Pool had an interview with Alex Jones, which was removed. And now
President Trump was taken off of X. I mean, there were Nick Fuentes, like, you don't have to like him. I know that that raises hairs on people where they're like, well, who cares what they have to say anyways? That's not the point. The point is that tons of us were censored in small ways, too. Like, I've never been able to monetize Instagram because I have so many hits against me for saying things like, yep, the cloth mask, we have new data on that. It doesn't work. And
yeah,
they're like,
do
well,
anything.
That's misinformation. You can't make money on this app anymore. I mean, it happened to all of us in one way or another. And we all knew it. We knew it as soon as, I mean, we knew it from our own experiences, but as soon as Zuckerberg got on Rogan and was like, yeah,
yeah,
Biden administration is basically yelling at us, telling us how to, you know, what kind of policies and what to dictate from on high and tell all of our users you can and can't say this or that. I mean, we all experienced it. As soon as he said that, and then everybody was just like, oh, yeah, that makes sense. I knew nothing was ever going to happen.
Yeah. And the and now they're saying like, yeah, we were wrong. We got pressure, and they're starting to reinstate, like people can now apply to get their accounts reinstated. But I just want to let me emphasize the difference here. Okay. Regular Americans use YouTube at the time were using YouTube to make a living. Okay. Yeah. Not just to express their ideas, but also to make a living. And all of these individuals were deplatformed because mm-hmm. of pressure from the administration
right.
to a private company forcing mm-hmm. them or essentially coercing them because
that's
it's
coercion.
Like, if you guys don't do that, we're going to start pushing regulation. And yeah. that's going to limit your ability as a company.
That's corruption.
That to me is way worse.
Well,
like,
against
I
the
do
law.
Not. Yeah. I do not excuse or approve of the messaging that was coming from Carr or from the president or anything like that, where they're kind of throwing their weight around and creating pressure.
Right.
But to me, this is so much more sinister because not only were we being like told that that's not happening or that it's different because it's for the well-being of Americans to get correct information. Does that sound mm-hmm. familiar? Does
yeah.
that sound familiar? Mm-hmm. Right. And then you had like CNN and the New York Times, who right now are all in for Jimmy Kimmel.
Yeah.
Where they framed all of this as like they're doing it for the better good. You know, it's really about making sure that the information that gets out is correct. It's not about mm-hmm. censorship or even saying like, well, you know, it's a private company. They have a right to do. And the Biden administration isn't doing that. The Biden administration is simply providing advice or mm-hmm. advising these platforms of the information. And then they themselves are deciding whether or not, which is not true because even Google's attorney is saying, no, we got direct pressure from the administration and from yep. Biden himself. Zuckerberg has also said the same thing. So
yep.
that to me is way worse because it's like an underhanded, covert way where it may, yep. and it's done in hand with the media
mm-hmm.
versus here, like, we can all openly object to what is going on and challenge the president because they're putting it all out in the open for us to object to it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't think it's comparable.
No.
And I just really think it's annoying that this report has just come out and they're like, so Jimmy Kimmel yeah. can't make his $1 million, is going to lose his show even though his contract is up and he's a horrible. What I saw a chart. I wish I had pulled it for this episode where someone had did a count of like all the late night shows mm-hmm. of the Democrats that they had on as guests versus the Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
And like all of the Republicans were like in single digits
yeah.
versus the Democrat guests that were on were like in the hundreds.
Yeah. Yeah. I know.
Like, don't gaslight me.
Mm-hmm.
You're driving me insane. So, and this is also happening in the context, by the way, which I didn't have here in the notes, but I talked about this in my stories last week, of Senator Grassley releasing documentation on Operation Arctic Frost. I think it was Arctic Frost, where conservative organizations were being investigated
by the FBI mm-hmm. for doing any type of election, you know, questioning of the election.
Yeah.
We are not the same. It's just like you're freaking out and you have Jake Tapper here saying that this is the most significant attack on free speech by an administration.
That's why I laughed. I'm like, this is laughable. It's laughable. This was a wide-scale nationwide assault on free speech where a private company was coerced into a corrupt relationship directly with the president of the United States and his administration to silence Americans and take away their First Amendment right to be able to say what they would like to say without the threat of all kinds of things. Not to mention, like, there was violence, like, threatened against people for speaking out about COVID. And it
they
was
lost their jobs.
It was a manipulation campaign. It was a gaslighting campaign. And it was done from the highest office in the free world. That is not what happened with Jimmy Kimmel. And so, no. I mean, they were excited for this thing to happen with Jimmy Kimmel because they can pivot and they can talk yeah. about this on the week that Charlie Kirk was assassinated for talking.
Well, and I think, you know, if you want to talk about, for me, reactions have a lot to say about, like, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, the fruit of a group of people. Obviously, mm-hmm. you can't collectively categorize everybody. Like, we're not, you know, I don't want to apply a broad brush across right. a large group of people.
Right.
But when this was happening during COVID, during the election, also the Hunter Biden laptop, too. Mm-hmm. Where you had all of these systems from the government in place censoring regular Americans with the assistance of the legacy media.
Yep.
Versus in this recent situation with Kimmel and what Carr said from the FCC and even this recent Truth Post from Trump, there is debate within the right on whether yeah. or not this was right or wrong. You had Ted yeah. Cruz come out and immediately condemn it. You had other yeah. Republicans say, well, these are the regulations that you guys put in place. So, you know, go change the law if you don't like it, which is kind of where my, like, I don't like it, but my thing is like, just get rid of the FCC. Like, I don't even yeah. like regulation to begin with. But also at the same time, don't tell Republicans to not use the tools that are given to them when the Democrats right. have been using them forever.
Yeah.
So that's kind of, but that debate was happening on the right. That was not happening Never. On the left.
No.
When all of the censorship was going on.
It was
on.
Very monolithic thinking on the left during COVID. When Correct. It came to vaccines, when it came to mandates, when it came to
the election and
disinformation,
Hunter Biden's laptop.
All yeah. of that they fell in line so quickly. And that continued for years, which is why they have fallen in line again and again and again on all of these issues that got them booted out of office, honestly.
Yeah.
I think that they all became very good little soldiers during COVID and it continued and they were just told what to think. And so even if they in another, you know, 5-10 years ago would have thought it was absolutely insane to tell a boy at 8 years old he can become a female, now they're being told by their party, this is what we do now. And they're conditioned now.
Side note, not even on these notes, I mean, on our note, but did you see that Harris, who's on a book tour right now,
mm-hmm.
sharing and making word salads on her book tour, that mm-hmm. she endorsed Mondani?
I did not see that.
Mm-hmm. So well, now you have Kathy Hochul.
She's definitely, she cannot be, I don't think she's running for any office. I thought for sure she was going
to
run for president.
I think she wants to.
I don't think she is.
But this book,
she
I
is
think,
burning
is
so many bridges. Like the Bidens are not on her team anymore. She threw Pete Buttigieg under the bus. Now she's going to vote for Mondani. Like what? Why?
Well,
what
she's,
gain
she's
is that?
She's endorsing Mondani. She can't vote for him.
I mean,
yeah.
yes, you know what I mean. Well, what's the gain there? It's so disingenuous. And then I heard her. Who was it? It was a. Was it Maddow? I think it was Maddow talking to her about something, and she just. I felt like I was. Kind of
I actually
the time
have
machine to like 2 years ago when we had to listen to her all the time. And I was reminded how just like there was no substance whatsoever to her statement. Truly.
Did you see the one where she called Trump a communist dictator?
No, but I mean,
I have it
under the sun.
Hold on. It's funny.
And right now we are dealing with, as I called him at my speech on the ellipse.
Yeah, we remember.
A tyrant.
Yeah.
We used to compare the strength of our democracy to communist dictators. That's what we're dealing with right now in Donald Trump. And these titans of industry are not speaking up. And perhaps it is because his threats and the way he has used the weight of the federal government to take out vengeance on his critics is something that they fear. And I get that. I understand why they do. We've seen the demonstration of it.
Anyways, that's just a little tiny, tiny snippet of the mess that she's been making.
Yeah. And I do remember that speech on the ellipse because I posted about it and I said then when she did that, and it was what, 2 years ago now, a year and a half ago, something like that. And I remember saying in my post and sharing it, this is the type of rhetoric that is going to get someone shot. This right here, comparing a person running for an election to a Nazi genocidal maniac. This is why there is violence from your party.
Well, and remember, she made that speech after there had already been an attempted assassination on him.
Yeah.
After the first one. Okay.
It's ridiculous.
After, and she, like,
bold as brass, just walked straight out there and said it again. Like, okay.
And this whole, like, titans of industry are afraid. No, titans of industry want to make money.
Yeah.
And they were bending themselves over backwards to curry favor with the Biden administration so they would be able to continue to make money. And the same thing is happening with Trump.
Yeah, they are titans.
And you can like it.
That is what
and
they
you
do.
Can be annoyed by it, but that is a fact. So, you know, I mean, it was actually one of the problems that we have, but that's a whole other tirade. But yeah, so she's, yeah, so
she's back in the limelight.
She's back in the limelight. She's trying to, and nobody likes her. In fact, a lot of the left is very, very upset. Because her book is not, it is.
Are you going to get
taste.
It? Are you going to read it?
I don't know if to read it. I think I want to read it, but I don't know if I want to spend money on it.
I know.
So I'm trying to see, like, should I wait a little while? Should I maybe just get the Kindle version of it? So I only pay $2 as opposed to like $30.
Well, yeah, because are you going to actually put it on your bookshelf? That was the problem I had. The book about Biden came out from Tapper and Thompson, and I was like, okay, I'm going to buy it so I can make notes in it. But then I'm like, oh, I have this. What am I supposed to do with it now?
I put it on my bookshelf.
I mean, it's a part of history, I suppose.
Well, and it shows, like, a diverse, you know, consumption of information. So,
For sure.
All right, so I'm going to do two more things, and then we're going to go ahead and wrap us up. So, Trump decided he is... The gilding has escaped the Oval Office and it now has entered the breezeway of the White House. Iconic location. You see this all the time. Presidents will take pictures of themselves with diplomats and with their staff walking the breezeway at the White House. And he, here we go.
You mean the one by the Rose Garden? Yeah. Okay.
Yes. This one right here. Now, for those of you who are not watching, the whole wall is covered in black and white images of the president with gold gilded, very large frames. And it's panning, like it's turning, and we got Bush, Clinton, W, Obama, President Trump. And then this image where a lot of people are like, what is this? It is the auto pen doing Joe Biden's signature. So it's not Joe Biden. It is the auto pen and then Trump again. So this is the, I don't even know what this is.
I mean, first of all, everybody can have their opinions on it. I think it's like, I don't like it. You know, I'm not going to like it.
Yeah.
Hate all
I don't like,
because
it's in the White House.
Yeah.
That's
I don't like that.
Like, I like I the idea of it. The idea to me is funny. Okay.
Well, because I think you're a little bit more of a troll than I am. Like, you appreciate a good troll and he is the best at it. And the reason I think he's doing it is because the media refuses to acknowledge that Joe Biden and Hunter now that came out like this week, they misused the auto pin. Like he didn't even know what was going on, truly. Like someone in his administration was just signing those, you know, pardons, like, autographs.
And all,
you get a pardon. Okay. So I think that he's really doing it because they refuse to acknowledge it. So he's like, well, I'm just going to put it in your face because press sees that all the time.
Yeah.
So, you know, whatever. But my question
I think it's the same as like the mugshot in his in the White House. Like the walkway to enter, not the White House, the Oval Office.
Right.
The press has to walk by that mugshot
every time.
Well,
and I think my biggest issue with it, I mean, I hate it. I just don't like it. And I don't like, I mean, we can talk, maybe we'll talk the whole unfiltered about this UFC fight that's planned because I got the plans for it and what it's going to look like, and I hate it. But if they're going to do it, why didn't they put those pictures in a straight line?
That,
what
yes.
is that?
I
that,
don't know.
That was what really makes my skin crawl. I'm like, why is it ascending at the end? Why?
As I need an answer a straight line. For that.
Yeah.
I agree with you.
I mean, so also at the same time, I see the ascension because the window ends. And so now your line of sight kind of goes up. But I also think it's kind of weird. Too.
It's very weird.
But whatever. Yeah. But I love it that it's by the Rose Garden. So literally every single event, every single
they
speech
have to look
from
at
the
it.
Rose Garden, the press. I mean, Caitlin Collins already did a full news story on it this morning on CNN. Yep. Like, it's a whole thing. And it really just ticks them. It is. It ticks them off so bad. That's why he's doing it, obviously.
I mean, it is an interesting way to force the conversation a little bit, you know? Yeah. I just, like, my thought, too, is I'm very curious at how other leaders who maybe come and visit view it. Do you? I mean, they're probably in agreement. They're just not going to, you know, they're just not as bold as, because, I mean, think about, what was it, the G7 or 8 or whatever. I don't forget what the number is. But when he, like, had to be ushered over by Maloney because he was wandering off.
Yeah, and then they lied to us and told us that those were, like, cheap fakes.
Yeah.
And so, like, no, everybody knows. Everybody can see.
All right. Well, on a more positive note, this one's cute and I want to share it with everybody. So this is J.D. Vance at that same event, but a much different tone.
Young man, this is a very earnest young man. He doesn't look like a journalist to me, but go ahead and shout out a question because I'm not going to deny that level of energy and that level of passion. First of all, what's your name?
Henry.
It's good to meet you, Henry. Ask your question, please.
I skipped school today. I was wondering if I could get a picture with you.
Yay, Henry.
It's like one of the only times you
Henry
get applause
said,
for skipping school.
Can I have a picture with you? Well, I guess you got to have some excuse to skip school, so I might as well get a photo with Henry.
Aw, Henry. Look at his little face. Yay, Henry.
That's adorable.
I thought that was cute.
Yeah.
His parents are like, whoops, should have told the teacher. Well, she knows now.
I think it's one of the few times that you get like a full room of applause for skipping class.
Heck yeah. The only time, really, I'm sure.
All right, well, that's it. I'm going to go ahead and wrap us up for today's episode of Rivera and Reeves. If this is your first time here, welcome. You have found your new favorite podcast. We're here every Tuesday and Thursday. For our paying supporters, we have a bonus episode this weekend of Unfiltered, exclusively for you. It will be only on Substack, audio and video, just for you, for paying and supporting us on that platform. So if you want to join us, please consider becoming a paying supporter. You absolutely do. Those conversations are a lot of fun. And you'll get access to the entire archive of all of our Unfiltered episodes, which are only for those of you who support us. Because, you know, we're so awesome. Anyways, there's a discount link in the show notes. So go ahead and click on that. Go do it. Do it right now. That's it. That's all we have. In the meantime, I guess we'll see you again on Tuesday for another episode of Rivera and Reeves. Here's a reminder that the media is trash and we have no tolerance for it. Okay, bye.
Bye.
Life is unpredictable, but how you prepare for the unexpected shouldn't be. Take ownership of your life planning with Policy Genius to help your loved ones have a financial safety net in case something happens to you. Whether to cover debts and routine expenses or even invest the money and earn interest over time. With Policy Genius, finding and buying life insurance is simple. You can compare quotes from top insurers and could find coverage that fits your needs and your budget. Plus, they offer life insurance policies starting at just $276 a year for $1 million in coverage. It's an easy way to feel good about and plan for the future. No wonder Policy Genius is the country's leading online insurance marketplace. Don't wait for life to make other plans. Protect your family today. Head to PolicyGenius.com to compare top-rated life insurance policies, get your lowest quote, and make a smart move in under 10 minutes. That's PolicyGenius.com.